Anything Outside solution for residential properties. Check us out on Facebook or give Adrian a call on 021 657 354.
If you have ever thought about volunteering, now is a great time to contact Volunteering Waikato. Their brand new website makes it easier than ever before to find the right opportunity in your town. Get involved in your community, boost your CV, meet new people and learn new skills. For more information, go to volunteeringwaikato.org.nz. Volunteering Waikato, enriching lives.
Good sounds, good karma.
I did that rather quickly. Kia ora, good evening, Whangaroa and Raglan. You're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio. Just gone 4 minutes past six, slightly earlier than usual. Let's have a look at what the weather's doing and what's happening and all that sort of stuff. So last time I looked, it was 10 degrees, going down to 9 degrees, so not much. Going down to 1 degree, though, on Friday, and maximum during the next few days will be about 13. So quite a bit of a range there, and quite cool on Friday. The rain seems to be, the showers seem to be dying out. Should disappear around about midnight, probably. And then we shouldn't have much in the way of moisture coming out of the sky, except possibly a shower about midday on Saturday. But not much anyway. Pressure, I suppose it fits in with that rain, 1,017 hectopascals. The wind is supposed to be dying down. It was a westerly of 30 knots. And with that comes a big swell, southwest swell, 5 metres. The next high tide in just an hour and a quarter's time, about 3 metres. Next one we'll actually see in daylight will be 20 to 8 tomorrow, a 2.9 metre tide, so very slightly lower than tonight. And the days now getting longer, both morning and evening. So a minute longer in the morning with 7.34 for a sunrise, and 5 minutes later in the evening with 16 minutes past 5 for a sunrise, so 50 minutes ago. The things which are on this week, there's Community Energy Whangaroa Energy Use and Healthy Homes event happening at the old school on Stewart Street at 6.30 this evening, so in 24 minutes time. And there's also the usual trivia night at Harbourview Hotel at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow, the Raglan Ramblers, as usual, going rambling. They were going to go to Karangahake Gorge, and I'm not quite sure why they're not anymore, except it's a two-hour drive each way, which is a pretty good reason not to. So just the beach walk in the morning instead. The weather should be quite a bit better, and as I say, the high tide is 7.40, so it should be well down by 9 o'clock. And the next thing I've got down is day after Thursday, the Karioi group is doing some track maintenance that day. So if you're interested in having a walk up the mountain on tracks you wouldn't normally go up, have a look for the Karioi project and find out what they're doing and when they're doing it. So starting 8.30 on Thursday morning, up near the top of Tuhutuwai Road. The old school's got some more films in connection with the Matariki celebrations. And this come from Tumorito. Some short films being shown at 6 on Friday evening. then they're showing their usual films over the weekend, so 7:30, Wicked Little Letters, which they've shown a few times before, about a 1920s English seaside town with a riotous mystery comedy. And then on Sunday, they're showing Taste of Things, a French romantic comedy for foodies. And also on Sunday, it's Crop Swap again, so 9:30 at the bowling club, if you want to swap your surplus, the fruit off your various citrus trees, I should think. The next thing, well, the only thing I've got down after that is there's a community garden working bee at 3 o'clock on next Tuesday. So almost time for the next Raglan Talking to Raglan. Things which have been in the news this week. Haven't actually noticed many things in the news. Not quite sure what's happened to the news these days. We used to have lots of things in the news, and these days we don't seem to have, well, not very much at all. Not sure why that should be. But anyway, the district council is still meeting, and they've got a meeting tomorrow morning of the Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee. It strikes me as odd that there's no mention of climate change in there, despite the council employing a couple of people on that work, and despite it being one of the main aims of that committee to try and mitigate and reduce and cope with climate change. And on that note, I did notice that there was a bit in the news today about one of the bank chairman talking to farmers and saying that there'd been a Chapman trip review, and that he was saying that 8% or more than 8% of exports from this country are to countries with mandatory climate related disclosures, either in force or on the way. So it's a good idea to actually reduce our impact on climate, if not for the reason of trying to reduce climate change, for the reason of trying to improve trade or not make it any worse anyway. So I thought that was an interesting take on it. It'd be interesting too to see whether the farmers who were speaking to take any notice of it. There are obviously some who are taking a lot of notice of it, but the government's just decided to exempt them from the climate change trading, which everybody else is subject to. I also noticed there's a mention on the Sustainability Committee agenda of the Raglan Community Board doing its plan and apparently going to approve it at their 31st of July hui. Another odd thing that struck me on the agenda was that it includes a list of businesses that the council's engaging with about sustainability, and most of those businesses, I can understand why, but they've also got Bathurst Coal on there, and Bathurst Coal is the virtually the remaining coal miner at Huntly. Coal mining is not usually considered good for sustainability, so quite how they're engaging with them, I don't know. There's also news about the water reservoir tower mural, as they're calling it. So that's the one at the top of Bow Street, which is gradually being covered in graffiti and fading anyway. So they've apparently got $50,000 from the Department of Internal Affairs. I thought government departments were short of money, so I'm not quite sure how they managed to get that. But they've done the landscape plan, they say, which is waiting for community board approval. Not sure whether that's the same one we saw before or whether it's a new one. They're also looking at lighting options, so presumably whether it's going to be lit up, which might reveal people who are putting graffiti on it. And they had interest from 17 artists, which they've shortlisted down to 5. And they've got the Whangaroa Youth Collective involved. And they've got an advisory panel with 2 youth reps on it. And they're going to select the final artist and they're expecting it to take 8 months to complete. There's also mention of Tiara Trail. It's the long-distance walkway that goes from one end of the country to the other. It's about 3,000 kilometres altogether, and apparently about 100 kilometres of it goes through Waikato District. So it basically follows the river, and then it goes across the Akarimata Range behind Narawahia, comes down to the river again, and then through Hamilton, and then cuts across to Whatupata, and then heads for the Karamu Walkway and Pirongia and southwards. And they're saying it's one of the least visited sections of the trail and has suffered from a lack of maintenance. A local volunteer group consisting of North Waikato residents has been formed to improve the track state, and there's also a scope for the group to evolve into an operation that can fund paid positions. So I'm wondering why it's the North Waikato residents and whether there's an opportunity for South Waikato residents as well to get involved in that's presumably the other half of the track, the other 50 kilometres that, as I say, heads south and goes through Hamilton and comes out through Whatupata, and you might occasionally see people with big packs walking down the side of the main road at Whatupata. It does seem to me that there ought to be an extra bridge there, so that's one of the things that could be improved, so we don't have to walk down the side of the road, but could cut straight across and maybe save a kilometre or two on the walk. Obviously, we should have already done most of their shopping in Hamilton, so they don't need to go through Whatupata on the way. So, not sure whether there's any possibility there. Also, noticed that the list of projects on that got the better off funding from the last government, most of them have got dates on them. I was talking to Aaron this morning whether the 2027 date for the Whangaroa Wharf walkways, which we both agreed seemed to have been finished except for planting some Puhutukawa trees or replanting the ones that they destroyed when they did the work. That's got a date 2027 on it, and Aaron suggested maybe that was a typo and that they typed 7 instead of 4. And also noticed that the Sustainability Committee has an update on energy farms, which are presumably wind and solar farms. Unfortunate public is excluded from that, so I haven't got any details. There's also been discussion of the annual plan, and there's something like $43.5 million included for the sewage upgrade, which it looks like $23 million being spent on the current upgrades, which is putting the filters on, and presumably the rest of it is for the disposal of the treated sewage, which may go to land rather than going straight in the harbour. And there's also $12 million in there to replace the single lane bridge. And there's still the $200,000 they were talking about for the traffic signals before they get round to doing that, which they postponed from this year's plan, which is presumably coming up in another one. Also been looking at the Regional Council Transport Agenda. They've got a... they're talking about they're talking about instigating trials of low-cost, low-risk public transport services over the next 3 years. For example, the Raglan Regional Bus Extension, by which I think they mean running the bus every day out to Manu Bay. Since it's usually empty going out to Manu Bay, I'm not quite sure why, but that's a proposal anyway, or was the proposal. But maybe it's because the bus patronage on the Raglan bus is up more than any of the other buses, 45% 45.2% increase since last year. But they have just put the fares up by 20%, which may well cut that. They were saying it probably cut passengers by about 4%. And the Reef quarter last time when the buses were running at least half of them on time has dropped back again. So we're now back to only 42.5% of them being on well, not even on time, within 5 minutes of correct time. So interesting to see what happens there. It's a rather depressing graph, which is depressing for those of us who think that more money ought to be being spent on buses and walking and cycling rather than encouraging us to drive yet more than we do at the moment. Already one of the countries with lots of cars and rather more than, well above the average use in most countries that we might compare ourselves with. So I've actually put a couple of pie charts, if you're interested in seeing the comparison, on the Whangaroa Environmental Defence Facebook page. Two side by side, you can see that the walking, cycling and public transport and safety promotion budget's gone from 69% of the budget proposed in February, which was working on what the old government was proposing, to 12% on the meeting they had last week, which is looking at what the new government wants. So quite a change from 69% to 12% in the wrong direction, I think. The government's also consulting over speed limits. The faster you go, the more fuel you consume. And I was mentioning earlier that issue with the climate-related disclosures from countries we're exporting to. So all this is heading in what I think is the wrong direction. But if you think it's, if you've got any thoughts at all on it, there's consultation open until Thursday. And so if you have a look at the Ministry of Transport website and you have a look for their 2024 consultation on setting of speed limits, you can have your say on it. And again, if you want to have a look at Whangaroa Environmental Defence page, there's a post on there as well with some suggestions as to what you might want to say. So it's now 20 past six. I think with a fairly low number of things available in the news at the moment. I think that covers most of the local news. So let's listen to... I did mention that De Morito had those films on Friday, so maybe we can listen to an interview that Aaron did talking about that issue. Let's press the right button. I've got there.
And we're ready now for our next interview of the morning. I've got Tuihana from Te Maurito in the studio. Good morning.
Tēnā rā koe, Aaron. Kia ora, tēnei te mihi, kia koutou o Whāingaroa. Tēnei rangi mokopuna. It's such a glorious day in paradise.
It is today, isn't it? Yeah, it's fantastic. So we had one interview earlier this week about the festival. I called it a film festival, but it's more than that. It's a festival at the old school starting tomorrow, a Matariki. And there are films being shown. And we're here to talk with Tuihana about what's been shown next Friday at 6 o'clock in the evening. And it's headlined Te Kumara, which is a film that Te Maurito made a little while ago. But we want to sort of set the scene a little bit because, first of all, it wasn't the first film that was, or a collection of films called He Pai Kōrero. And, but even before that, I think we want to set the scene and just talk about what Te Maurito's kaupapa is and why you guys set it up. Because you and Katarina began?
Yeah, Katarina and I.
Yeah, Katarina Mataira, if people are trying to place names.
Yeah, Katarina Kōrero. Yes, we started back in last century, actually. in the late 1990s, we had been involved in the revival and survival of Reo Māori, and that was a big focus of our lives with through kohanga, tautārangi, through kura kaupapa Māori, and the establishment of Tōku Māpihi Mōrearea, which is a kura kaupapa Māori that's still happening in Hamilton and Silverdale. So we were involved in all of those things, but once the kura of Tōku Māpihi Mōrearea got funding from the government, from our perspective, you know, the controls of the government came over and it became, for us and only us, it became a brown-white school, basically, and the freedom that we'd had when we had no funding, even though it was hard, we had more freedom to be the kura that we wanted to be and have the education that we wanted for our children.
I'm sure no one's surprised that the system likes to have good control over what it has, under its wings.
Expectations and requirements that. In 1995, we withdrew our children from the school. A group of us we left our jobs as well, our own careers of lecturing and tutoring, and we went on the road in a van and a trailer, and we headed north because we thought we might establish a kura wānanga, was what we wanted to do, just to find out how do we live the kaupapa that we hold in our hearts 24/7, and that was how we went on the road and went north, and then we came back to Whaingaroa, back here for the birth of two nieces and two mokopuna and a niece, and that we got stuck. No, we decided that this was actually the community that was the attitudes, the whole vibration that was here.
There's an openness to, I don't want to just say new ideas because it's more than that. It's an openness to ideas that will bring change, I think, which you don't feel certainly in Hamilton.
True.
Yeah.
Well, our trust, Te Mōrearea, is an environmental, educational and health trust, and we're the foundations in Māori culture, language. So it's still very important to us, the revival, and we were all on the journey. It wasn't that it was all clear to us how to do things.
Yeah.
It was a journey of tuhura, of discovery.
And so you set up here and you didn't immediately start making videos.
No, we didn't. Yeah. We didn't. We set up here, and then eventually over time we became involved. I think Helen also got involved in the kaupapa, Helen Ritchie.
Yeah.
And she was doing some work for the Hamilton City Council at the time, who were exploring a kaupapa that came to be called Enviro Schools. And we were asked to get involved, Te Mōrearea was asked to get involved to bring in the Māori perspectives of that program. And at first, Katerina and I were not so keen because it was in English and we had been dedicating our lives to Māori resources, things in Māori, kaupapa Māori. However, it was a kaupapa Māori, and yes, there are many of our children that are still in English medium education. And so we did it, but quite conditionally. With the Enviro Schools people there, we said, well, we wouldn't get involved as long as they would agree for us to set up a total Māori immersion program at a later stage.
Out here?
Just within the kaupapa.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's a national kaupapa.
Right, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So we did that. We did that, and it's Te Aho Tūroa's, the Māori immersion program, not just for in schools, it's for in communities, because Te Mōrearea is a community organisation.
Yeah.
And Enviro Schools is in the English medium and early childhood, preschool, kindergartens and schools, secondary school. Over 1,500 of them now. It's a very big organisation.
See, I didn't know that. I didn't know that you guys were the ones who set that up.
And local people here was with the creation of the kit, which is the resource that goes with it. You know, we worked with people, Jeannie Rhodes, who artworks in it, Javier and Carolina were part of pulling it all together and the graphic side of it. It was just, yeah, it was beautiful. We involved as many people as we could within our community.
That was before I was here.
Ah.
Yeah, so it makes it over 24 years ago.
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
I know that much.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was happening, and then I guess in that context, making some films.
Well, it was because we were working with, like I said, we were, our responsibility first off with the EnviroSchools kaupapa was to bring in the Māori perspectives throughout the whole program. And, yeah, we decided then that we had several wānanga within ourselves, within the whānau of Te Mauritau, which was quite big at the time, and had amazing people present there. It was Andre Antonio and
Tikahurangi
and Ati and Susa and Irina. There were just so many people, and forgive me if I haven't named everybody. I mean, there's more. We had people from overseas as well. We had different nationalities. It wasn't exclusive as long as people were comfortable to be working from a Māori kaupapa foundation.
Mm.
Yeah, so we wanted to make sure that children, tamariki within the schools, had an opportunity to hear correct pronunciation was really important, but also to see some Māori people, you know, and the way that was available to us in those days was actually, the first thing we made was a video. It was
right.
That long ago.
Okay, yeah.
It was a video. And so it's been a bit of a technology journey too, because it went from a video to a DVD to a flash drive and
oh, you meant like literally a physical video with tape.
That was how we started with this one, and that was back in 2002-2003, and it was amazing. We had many people that we were able to reach out to, and Don Selwyn, who's Māori producer and actor and director, and he's done so many things. He did the Māori version of The Merchant of Venice. That was the big
I remember that happening.
Thing.
Yeah.
Well, he came to work with us, and we had John Watson. We had different people who were working in those areas because we knew nothing. Well, I think Antonio was the only one who had any experience at the time.
He had experience in the New Zealand film industry, so...
Just starting at that time. So and you know, we had to learn how to write up everything and do the storyboards, and it was a huge learning curve, and it took us a long time. I really acknowledge the EnviroSchools, what was then called the EnviroSchools Foundation, for the patience that they had with us, because it was our journey, as much as it was a journey, to produce this resource to,
because no one had done this before. So I guess...
Well, we didn't know, but we had Nancy Bunning as well, and Rawiri. We just had access and networks that brought really special people in, lots of them who are no longer with us, but who worked on this this production. I mean, there's many, many names of people who supported, because each these short films, probably about 15 or 16 of them.
Okay.
And they're each done with quite a different view. You know, they were stories that supported, you know, there's one about Haumapuhia, there's one about how fire came, because we will hear the stories about how Maui, well, according to the story, the version that most of us would have heard, how Maui beats up the earth. Beats up the sun, and you know, the interpretations that actually we wonder about how much of that has been influenced by other perspectives from other countries, like particularly stories were rewritten at that time by British male missionaries and their particular worldview
which nobody really shares anymore at all.
Well,
Maybe we do. Maybe it still is around.
Well, it is. It is. The impact of it is, definitely.
Yeah,
because it wiped out all of the the wahine, the woman, from many of the Māori stories, except Papatuanuku. You know, we're lucky that they kept to her.
It's a bit hard to, like, wipe her out of the story, I feel.
Yeah, but we didn't hear about them, and that was our journey as to Māori Tau, was to reawaken the knowledge of the wahine Māori, the wonderful woman, and the what they had given. And, you know, admittedly, there were ones like Mahuika, for instance, the fingernails of fire, you know, her children. But she was described as a heinous-old woman type thing, you know. And
like that tradition of the hag, the old hag, or
yeah,
something.
Something that was, again, it was the only eyes you can look at is the eyes that of your own experience. So, yeah, it did, but it did impact. And I think the role and the mana of the wahine was wahine Māori was seriously compromised through the impact of that perspective.
And do you think that has then come back and informed some Māori people growing up in the last 100 years or so?
Oh, totally, because the stories that, again, as an oral culture, it was the ones that were written, and they were predominantly written by non-Māori and then retold by Māori. So it's only in the more recent years that there's been a lot of exploration of these. And in Tonio, along with Te Māori Tau, we did a whole lot of wānanga that we're exploring. Well, how else could it be? You know, what could this mean? You know, the whole story of Muriranga Whenua giving her lower jaw bone, and there's this physical giving of a bone, according to, you know, some of the stories are quite literal, and yet the knowledge is understood in two different realms. One's the kowairunga, which is the knowledge, spiritual knowledge, right through to the time of coming to Aotearoa, and the kowairaro is the knowledge. This is how I have had it shared with me, is from the arrival here and the stories that pertain to this land. So she gave the practical knowledge to him about how to catch this.
Right,
fish.
There we go. Yeah, so that's the thing. So it's not just the world view of the people who were writing it down, but also they were a literary culture and trying to interpret things from an oral culture.
Yeah, that was metaphoric.
Yeah, not literal, metaphoric, yeah.
Well, it was literal in that, yeah, living in every day, but the whole language is very metaphorical because it opens up all aspects of our being, our spiritual aspects, our hearts and everything, which is a little bit different to, you know, it's like kei te ua, it's raining. But if you just literally translate it, it's kei te ua, e ua na. And yet in Māori you would say, you know, kei te heke mai ngā roimata o Ranginui, the tears of Ranginui are falling, you know, kia papatuanuku, to papatuanuku. So then there's a whole whakapapa, and then there's a whole, well, why is he crying for her? And then, you know, it just opens up a huge realm of knowledge and mystery and inquiry.
And you can see how a person's worldview would be profoundly different when you talk about the rain as one example in that way. Yeah, and that's, I mean, yeah, so the stories that the missionaries, the way they wrote it down, they would just be a shadow of what it really meant. That's what it feels like anyway, yeah.
So some of the stories in this particular collection now. Yeah. I was going to say a DVD, but it's not that anymore.
We've got a DVD cover here, folks. But actually, no, we have DVDs in the room. But
yes, we do have DVDs in the room, but we have a flash drive as well, and now we're realising that that's not working either. We're going to need to go to the MP4.
Yeah, MP4. Yeah, that'll do the job.
You know, like it's trying to keep up with the times and keep
translating the versions. From VHS to DVD
and the technical hassles we've had in that process, because the actual flash drives, I've just realised, didn't work.
Right, so hopefully there's a copy somewhere.
Yeah, I've got the DVD form.
Oh yeah, you've got the DVD form.
Yeah, there's a little story about that, but we'll share that another time.
Well, that laptop plays DVDs.
Uh-huh.
If you get really stuck, we can use that. It's one of the last ones.
Yes, yeah. Most of it. On the
around Whale Bay, around there.
Yeah, we did filming at the Corkitty by the jogging. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we still do that, but we've diverted a lot from it.
Yes.
Thankfully.
Yes, yeah, no, it's been an amazing journey that. And to see its development now is incredible.
Yeah, because for folks who don't know, Katarina and Tuihana were two of the six official founders of Extreme Zero Waste, or lots of other people around it at the time. Mm. Yeah, mm.
Yeah.
So we've just been talking about He Pai Kōrero, the video collection.
Yeah.
And you're going to show that at...
show some of them.
Some of them. Because there's 15, you said, yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is for Friday, 5th of July, 6 p.m. at the Old School. And then after that, you're going to show Te Kūmara.
Yeah, Te Kūmara. So the He Pai Kōrero was filmed, created... Like I said, it was the learning journey. So it was 2002, 2003, somewhere around there, not quite positive. But it was produced in 2004, so it's 20 years old. Mm. Yeah, now. Mm.
Wow, yeah.
And then we actually went into 2008, we went into the Kūmara. We had been working with this amazing kraua, Wirimu Tawhai. He's from... O Maio from Te Whanaua Rūtaia and Te Whanaua Apanui, so going around the east coast, around Te Kaha area. And he was supporting us he was actually on the board of EnviroSchools Foundation board, but he was advising us and supporting us with the development also of the Māori immersion program that I said, you know, Te Aho Tūroa, an incredible man. And he had set up some time before, and I don't know exactly when, but it was certainly before 2008, where he had got his whānau, his siblings and other people within the community, the hapū and iwi, to come together and see if they could piece together how to build a rua kūmara, which is the Māori, the storage pit, for kūmara. And he held several wānanga to work out, see what they could remember. And then they set out to actually do it. So they started from the tāpapa, which is the seed bed for the planting of the seed.
Yeah.
And then when you murua, when you pick those ones and then you plant them, rūmaki is to plant them in the garden. And while they're growing, they were building this rua kūmara. And it's just an awesome community, intergenerational journey that they went on. It was and it was filmed. I think it was Awa Nui Arangi that actually did the filming. But we had been working with this kraua for several years, and he would come to Whaingaroa and we would go to him over in Whakatane, where he was teaching at the time. And we'd say, well, Koro, you know, you help us so much, what can we do for you? And he just nod at us, he wouldn't say anything else. It was just like, yeah, in time.
Right.
And then one day, Te Rawhitiro and I were working with him over in Whakatane, and he came to us with this box and said, I want you to make me a film. And in the box were 13 3-hour tapes.
I'm trying to do the math. That's a lot of hours.
It's a lot of hours. And, it was an amazing journey. We started on then. We were excited to be able to do something for him. And the work that he'd done, this filming of this journey of retrieving and then actually whakatinana, the actual manifestation of all of that learning, was amazing. It was incredible. We're fortunate that we started to do those interviews with him before, you know, like before we had actually produced the actual film, you know, right. the collection of the
It gave you a deeper understanding.
Storyline. Well, it just, I don't know why we decided that. I'm just super grateful we did. But he went through the process, and it was such a process that as he talked, it fitted, even though he wasn't watching the film and he'd done it years before, it was totally, even in pace with what he was doing, it okay. fit. It just came together. And so that took us some time to both go through all of those, that footage, and Te Rāwhiti Rō worked on it. We had people, support from other people. It was amazing. And but
so that it survived, because that was your food, you know, and there was no supermarkets or that sort sure. of thing. Yeah, you actually get a feel for what life was like at that time.
Well, that's the other beautiful thing about this is that the Karaua, for the long version, which is over an hour long, might even be 2 hours long, but there's a lot of him just talking and telling stories about life. But that's all in Māori. We haven't subtitled that one,
right.
you know, in those times. And that's where a lot of the knowledge either went underground or was actually lost. And because of the way the children were treated within the schools in particular and punished for speaking Māori, there was a big reaction from them when they had children was, we're not going to teach our children because...
Yeah,
we don't
yeah.
want them to be hurt, but also we want them to be able to succeed in this other world, you know, yeah. that was now becoming the dominant paradigm.
Mm. I remember talking to Ngaronoa about her journey, and she developed the intention that she wanted her children to be able to learn te reo, and then she started talking amongst her family and discovered that the older woman could all speak, but she'd never heard them speak.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that was sad, but also it was great because suddenly she had this resource that, you know, and I guess lucky's the wrong word, but I don't know what else to say. Mm. We're lucky it all happened so recently in history that there was enough of a connection to modern day that we could reclaim a lot of this knowledge.
Yeah, so her generation, my generation, didn't grow up with Māori as a first language, but many of us did try and ensure that our children, or at least in my whānau, my younger children, and native first language, native speakers of Māori.
But that meant you had to learn it first to be able to do that.
It did, and the older ones didn't have that opportunity because I didn't have it then, or my generation didn't have it then. And it was then when our parent generation who did have it were in a position to feel comfortable enough to be sharing it and also revival. But it was unfortunate that the government did not support Te Ātarangi like it supported Kōhanga Reo.
Oh, that'll be why I don't know the name like I know Kōhanga
Reo. That's
right, interesting. Mm. So, folks, we're talking to Tuihana from Te Mauritau, and mostly we're here to talk about the film that's showing as part of the Matariki Festival at the Old School. This film, Te Kūmira, on Friday the 5th of July at 6 p.m, but also some of the collection of He Pai Kōrero, films made before that by Te Mauritau, I think, to something, yeah.
And then later on, these other kaupapa started to emerge. For Katarina, Pōtiria Te Aroha, and that was with Ruth Beagle-Hall, who is Jane Ritchie's sister.
Yeah,
and Helen Ritchie's auntie. Yeah, but I'd love her to tell her story, not for me to do that. However, yes, Te Mauritau has started off with a very wide range of different kaupapa, and now we sort of have three main focus kaupapa and the Pōtiria Te Aroha and parenting with nonviolence is one of them. Facilitation, the techniques of participation, which is Helen Ritchie and Michelle Rush. So we work with facilitators from around the country and share with them a particular technique of facilitation that Helen needs to talk to you about, because
that's her thing, that's been her thing for a long time, isn't it?
She's known as the Jedi facilitator. Yep. Amazing woman. And so we had that facilitation program, and we also then have the what's now Toimata Enviro Schools Foundation became Toimata to be able to embrace more fully the Te Aho Tūroa, the Māori immersion program, as well as the Enviro Schools program.
Mm.
Yeah. So those are the main programs that we hold, and still, you know, the manaaki, still the connection with the whenua, and that we are an organisation that is in transition. You know, many of the young people were involved have moved on to many other kaupapa and places in the country, in the world, you know, life. You know, that they don't need to be separate anymore. They just are life.
Not a special category.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Mm. You'll be there?
I'd just really like to acknowledge those lovely ladies who have set up this festival for us. You know, Lara, Lisa and Michelle. It's just amazing. And to be able to celebrate, because, you know, apart from when we actually did win the Rafa Award, you know, that in 2012 maybe, I'm not sure, somewhere around then.
Yeah,
you know, like, I don't think we've shared it again with the community, and yet these are things that were happening in this community, and we have so many amazing, incredible people doing amazing, incredible things. Wonderful that we can actually share them again with new generations, and also the other new people who are moving into the community now.
Yeah, and it's such an important document for just retaining that knowledge and that understanding of life back then.
Also, you know, that the work that they've done on the tiriti and Toitū te tiriti, and just awakening the awareness within the people, the general community is so important, because otherwise I feel we can lose our community and we will just become a town that's full of people that come and go and do whatever.
Yeah, we don't want that. It's
a very special space that we're in here, and we want to honour it.
All right, thanks for coming in, Tuihana.
Tēnā rā atu, tēnā koutou katoa.
And 10 to 7, let's have the top of the hour, and then we'll listen to Crystal and Isabel talking about the karaoke and that track clearing that I mentioned. So here goes.
Kia ora whaingaroa. This is your local captain, Barlow of the Wahine Mui. Come and join us as we go around this beautiful Whaingaroa harbour and learn all about the Raglan history. We also have bookings for private parties, memorial events and family reunions. We can do it all on the water. Also, you can just rock up to the wharf for a lunchtime or sunset cruise. We've got a licensed bar and snacks, and you can check out our schedule at raglanboatcharters.co.nz. So hope to see you guys soon. Kia ora.
Raglan Fish is giving away corn fritters all through winter. If you order a meal deal online or in person, Monday to Friday, you'll get a corn fritter for free. All you need to do is order a meal deal via the link on the Raglan Fish Facebook page, or head on down to the wharf at the end of Wallace Street to make your order. See you at the wharf.
Are you too busy to do your garden or lawns? Maybe you need some help, or you just can't be bothered. Waitere Property Maintenance is here to help. Here's Craig to give you the full list of services.
Lawns, rubbish removal, gardens, gutter cleaning, edges, water blasting, hedges, tree removal, window cleaning, grass seeding, small excavations, topsoiling and weed spraying.
Waitere Property Maintenance, we're your local do-anything-outside solution for residential properties. Check us out on Facebook or give Adrian a call on 021 657 354.
Raglan Community Radio supports the code of broadcasting practice for the broadcasts of its radio programs. If you hear something you find offensive or intentionally misleading on our station, you have the right to complain. A formal complaint about a specific program or incident must be made within 20 days of broadcast of that program to Raglan Community Radio, PO Box 126, Raglan.
Mm. Yeah, let's listen to Crystal and Isabel.
All right, let's go.
Do it.
So, hello, Crystal.
Kia ora.
Hello, Isabel.
Hello, Darren. Aaron.
This relates to some jokes we're making off the air, which make no sense to anybody. But stems from me forgetting Isabel's name. At least I had the presence of mind to ask you before we went on the air.
Yes.
That would have been good. So, Isabel, what's your role? Everybody knows that Crystal is
CEO.
The top dog at Cutio Project. Isabel, what's your role?
One of them is the backyard hub coordinator.
Okay.
So I get people trapping at home. As soon as they're keen, we jump on it. We get them trapping.
Right, and people will know your voice because aren't you on one of our ads?
That's right. I'm slightly famous with the advert we did a couple of years ago.
Has anyone at all said they recognise you? Because you're like, you've got a line and then...
No.
Then it's your kids
but
after
some
that.
People have called us because they said we heard the advert on the radio. So.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be terrible if it had been on all that time and no one had called.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
So maybe just say what the Backyard Hub is for people.
So I guess Cutio Project started with traps on the mountain and in all these public reserves and stuff. And there was this big lack of trapping happening in town. And so the Backyard Hub is there to kind of fill that gap and encourage landowners, as much residential as on the farms everywhere, anyone who's keen to do their own little bit in their backyard to jump on board and...
So how many houses, in town have you got, do you know, off the top of your head?
We've got nearly 500 families.
Yeah, about 500 or nearly 500 households trapping.
That's pretty substantial.
If they are checking their traps, that is.
Ah.
Yes, that's how many have signed up since kind of the beginning of the Backyard Hub that we know of. There's probably others that, you know, are just doing it. They bought it at somewhere else and they're trapping. But also it does, you know, who knows, some people might have even moved away and we don't know, or they've got traps that
okay,
are
okay, but you've definitely had buy-in, though, like
oh,
from the 100%, community. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good, but we need more.
You need more, and that's why you're here.
That's right.
Yeah. Are we talking about what you guys wanted to talk about, by the way? Because we didn't actually discuss that.
That's why Isabel's here. She's, like, got the talking stick today.
Is that right?
Yeah, this is a badly prepared interview. We just joked about people's names, and then we came on the air. But
I think what I love about the Backyard Hub is that, you know, people often react, right? Like, they don't care about something until, like, the possum comes into their backyard and eats all the fruit that they've been waiting for it to ripen, or you know, the rats chew through their wiring in their car, or they chew through the wall. In wintertime, because they want to come inside. Like, honestly, we've heard all kinds of stories. Like, I won't name any names, but recently someone had a new digger and all the wiring got chewed through.
Oh, man.
Okay, so you know who owns a digger around town. Anyway.
and is not using it.
Anyway.
Oh,
so,
that would be very frustrating.
This happens, right? So
what, but
we
hold
don't
on.
Make up those stories. And it's like,
why are they eating the wires, though? Like, they want some...
I don't know.
I don't know if this is true, but someone has told me that they put this kind of fat around wiring that, like, to protect the wires or something. Some kind of grease that attracts the rats for some reason.
Oh.
But I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah. It's like, there's all sorts of things. Anyway,
well,
like,
maybe
questions, Aaron. But
well,
anyway, they do this. They do this. These rats do this. These possums do this. And then people are like, oh my gosh, why is the council not taking care of this? Why are they not coming to catch my rats or my possums?
And the council's like, we don't have a department for that.
No, but that's literally like the reactions, like, why are they here? Like, now they're bothering me, they're affecting my life. And so they'd ring the council and they'd go, and the council would go like, why don't you run the Cutio Project? And so literally in the early days, it was like running around trying to give people traps. And I was like, I don't have time to do this. And so then...
Oh, really? That's what was happening?
Yeah. And so they'd be like, oh, you can solve it. And you know, preferably get it for as cheap a price as possible. And that's great, right? Because it shows that people, you know, in need, like when something happens, then they want to address the crisis, which is basically the crisis that we're trying to deal with every day.
Yeah.
And so it's awesome because, you know, when something suddenly affects people personally, then they want to get on board. And so for us, it's like a great way to inspire people to contribute. And not only will it make their life better, it makes everyone's life better because it contributes to biodiversity You know, like, so if you do the predator control, you get the results. And we know that. We've seen it time and time again. And so back in the day, like, we'd have small block owners, you know, like we were talking about earlier, like, that would maybe just have, like, a couple of hectares of native bush. And they start trapping possums. And, like, Nick was like that, who used to run the backyard hub. And I think she pulled out, like, 30 possums over a couple of months. And so it's incredible how many animals can be in those small remnant bush blocks.
What do you do with the dead possums?
Oh, you... People always ask me.
Yeah, well, you've just... I'm now visualising a pile of 30 dead possums.
Yeah, like. They do pile up and they become food for other species, little insects and flies and maggots.
I mean, if you're on a lifestyle block, yeah. It's really easy. You can just toss it.
You can put it in compost, you can bury it if you want.
Okay, because that's what would happen at the end of its natural life anyway, wouldn't it?
But the possums didn't arrive like in one night. This was over a period of a few months. You know, like, so she was trapping, getting one, another one, another one. And that became really inspirational for us. It's like, wow, like, we can... So that's when we set up the backyard hub. We set up a trapping library so people could borrow traps. So it's exciting, you know, to see people's response. And, like, yeah, do you want to tell the story about Brooke? So Brooke's one of our educators who's right now picking up a bunch of year 7 and 8s and taking them trapping. From Raglan Area
School.
Do
you think she's listening right now?
No, she's not, but she knows. She knows who I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, it's all right. Mm. So she's kind of involved with it. She's been involved with the project as an educator for years. And really, I don't think has done actually much trapping at home, really, I would say. Maybe a little bit with us on the mountain and stuff. But just recently, she's just noticed or... wanted to do something maybe a bit more about the possums and the rats, and she started trapping, and it just kind of gets a little bit addictive, not just for Brooke, just for anyone. Like, there's just such satisfaction. Like, you get
progress.
Like empowerment a little bit, like, yeah, I've got one down, and then you just want to keep going. And some people just, you know, will get more traps or more, you know, or just check it every single day to you know, get to those numbers.
So what did she end up trapping?
Oh, how many? No, yeah. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think she told me she got about six possums.
Six possums.
Six, just in like a really short period of time. Yeah, she's so, out, kind of just outside of town.
So are we in a situation where you guys are doing good work on the mountain, but it's kept getting fed by the town? Like the pests up there getting...
Well, yeah, not just town, but it's all the remnant bush blocks. So, like, that's why we have traps around Kaitoku Walkway. We have traps around Friends of Wainui Bush Reserves, around the pine trees, around, you know, as many people on, like, Wainui Road. Like you can never have enough traps, like, you know, because... And sometimes you'll find that the traps don't catch anything for ages, and then suddenly... You know, you might have a trap somewhere where it's a pathway. Like, Let's Grow, that area around Let's Grow and Rocket.
Yeah.
Like, it's prime area for rats, just with the waterway. Kids eating food around the cafes, it all attracts rats, right? Rats and mice.
Oh, your kids dropping food.
Dropping. So crumbs, when my daughter went there.
And daycare.
Like, just to say, this is like over 5 years ago when my daughter went there, I literally saw... trails of rats going to the chicken coop. They would sit in the chicken coop looking at me, eating the chicken food, and then they'd feed the kids outside back in those days. The kids would go back inside and the rats would come in and eat the scraps and leave again. And they were so, like, used to that. They were, like, nearly tame.
Mm.
And so it was like, oh, it's actually also a public health problem.
But can I just say, they've got some amazing educators that have taken it on board.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And they've got their own little trap line and they check it very regularly.
Yeah, yeah.
That and, you know, Wainui Environmental, they've got their own little trap line. So that they are, you know, there's lots of rats, but they're doing something about them.
Yeah.
And that's what we like to see.
Yeah, and that's the good news story, right?
Yeah.
Is that they saw the problem, they came to us, we set them up, and, you know, they're really happy to do it themselves, but also we can also provide a service that we do it for people that are listening to us and going, oh my gosh, I do not want to do that ever.
It's 30 possums,
but I still
no
want
thanks.
To get rid of these rats and mice, so then what can they do?
Well, they can call us and we can set them up. So we've got close to 10 properties that we see every fortnight and do their trapping for them. But we're just about to launch a little trial in Rangitahi.
Yes.
Because it sounds like there's quite a few rats hanging around.
Over there.
Yeah, lots of residents saying, ah, I've got rats. And mice and possums.
They've just discovered Rangitahi is now full of breadcrumbs and things.
Yeah, yeah. So Rangitahi, just to say, they're also doing their bit. Like, it's not all doom and gloom. They've installed a trap line that goes all the way around the perimeter of the peninsula.
Okay.
Or part of it, you know, the big first part kind of thing. But within the peninsula, where all those houses are, there's a lot of houses there, so there's a lot of crumbs and rubbish bins and everything. And so we're just about to launch this deal. We're going to try to do it for a fraction of what we normally offer this service and get as many, because we figure it's pretty much like, you know, you don't have to drive very far to get to all these properties. So if 10 people can sign up, 10 households can sign up, then we can offer it a lot cheaper than if we have to drive to Greenslade Road and then drive to Upper Wainui and drive to, you know.
If they're all within walking distance, then.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one job.
Yeah. So multiple households contributing a small amount of money per month, and then we go and check the traps.
A bit like a co-op kind of.
Yeah. They just group together. Group discount.
Mm. End of July, we're going to hopefully have enough people on board and launch that in Rangitahi. So if you're listening and you're in Rangitahi, reach out. We are going to have a little info session on Sunday the 7th in the afternoon.
Yes.
At Rangitahi, for those people to just come and, you know, either buy a trap if they want to do it themselves or just come and find out more about this.
Mm. And have you got the right traps or the best traps?
No, we only provide the wrong traps, Aaron. You know, that's our gig.
I set it up for you and you did that. Don't call the Karigo project. Good traps.
Don't call us because we will only provide you with the wrong traps.
Yeah. Call Jasmine at the Environment Centre.
Yeah. She'll send them our way.
It's a vicious circle. No matter who you call, it comes back to us.
Yes, we've got great traps. Great little reliable traps. It's not rocket science. Like, it's not.
But people struggle. We struggle sometimes with the traps. Like, some traps that just, I don't know, it just doesn't work.
Maybe we need to come and do a little fine-tuning.
We know that people struggle, but we cannot help with every problem in people's lives.
Just the traps.
Help with the struggle. Sorry, I'm being facetious.
Yeah, again.
It's true. No, it's a really good point, actually, because we often get people like, we put a trap out and it didn't work and these traps don't work. And you're right. Sometimes the traps don't work. We have done, we read a lot of research and we do our own research with camera monitoring and that. And sometimes we get sold the best trap and it'll catch 3 rats in one night, like some of these self-setting ones.
Yeah.
And it'll catch possums on the bush line. And then we have a trap sitting, like we trialed one at my place. The possum was sitting on the trap. The possum would not go inside the trap. The possum is an individual and it will choose to go in or not. And so some traps will be attractive to some possums and not to others. And so we always say you got to use all the tools in the toolbox.
Yeah.
So one trap does not fit all. You need to sometimes swap the traps out. You need to sometimes use a different bait. You might need to put it at a different place because the type of tree you put it on, looking for marks, looking for tracks. So it's a little bit of guesswork. So sometimes we set up a site that we did recently and we'll put a few different traps in different places and you'll get really high either bait take or trap, you know, engagement in one place and not in another. Who knows why?
Yeah.
So it happens because rats don't walk everywhere. They use, like, they scurry around little side and edges or
they do like edges, don't they?
Bins.
Don't put your trap in the middle of a space.
No. So it is a little bit of science of, like, trying to work out where's the trap going to go, where, you know, should we move it a little bit? Like, literally, we've talked to people who have been trapping. They weren't trapping anything. They literally put the trap 2 meters in another place, 2 meters away, and caught the possum or the rat, you know?
Okay.
So don't give up. That's my encouragement. It's like, if one thing doesn't work, try something else, put it in a...
Yeah, just...
it's just like not nice to have around your house. It's also good for biodiversity. And if you're still not convinced to do this, it's a really good dinner party conversation starter.
Yeah. It's definitely probably the easiest and the...
Yeah.
One of the, it's way up there on the rats.
Yeah, it was really nice seeing her talk to her people, you know, like seeing the support. She was stoked that there was lots of Kariwi people. It was really nice.
Yeah, it was people were crammed into the front the bar of the Harbour Hotel. Yeah, it did get pretty warm.
Yeah, I was dressed for the back garden.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, because that's where I'd been last time. Yeah, but it was very cold outside. Yeah. So that's for people wondering, this is the corridor project between Mangatauteri and Parongia.
Mm.
And when I saw, because I'd interviewed her about it a couple of weeks earlier, but when I saw the maps, I was like, oh, that's a long way.
Oh, yeah.
That's an ambitious project.
Mm.
But it sounds like there's just so much community support for it over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's cool because, like, once, you know, a few farmers get planting and doing that stuff, it really inspires their neighbours and other people around them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'd already had, like, huge support and amazing farmers doing some of that work. And then the project, you know, became from a stream care project, it became a wider vision around connecting the two mountains. And, yeah, it's really cool to see... You know, they've just built on that momentum. And having funding out there is obviously really helpful. So they've got really great funding from, like, the Waikato River Authority and that. And so they can provide farmers a really good deal, you know, which is obviously encouraging. And then farmers feel supported too because a lot of them want to do this work, but sometimes the cost can be prohibitive.
Yeah, and that's... What I see in all of this, like the Kariwi project, and you're talking about how the backyard hub started with, there was just demand for it or there was just interest in it, and the Kariwi project started off with random people trapping on the mountain because they just felt like they wanted to. And that project over there, a lot of things started, some things started 20 years ago and they've just, everything just keeps going.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And it can seed other areas, but lots of trapping required.
Yeah, definitely need the trapping. And that's the thing that we're really trying to work with landowners too. We've had some awesome landowners revegetating whole bare areas of, you know, paddocks and, like, buying up land and replanting it with harbour care. And then we've come in and then providing the trapping service to have harbour care in this community anymore.
Mm. Mm. And one last question. We always ask what the oia is up to at the moment, the grey-faced petrel.
Mm, they're out at sea. But exciting, we have just been catching little blues on camera.
Little blue penguins?
Yep, little blue penguins. So they are coming in and out because they come to shore every night and they nest building and starting their breeding cycle as well. So
dogs on our on the leash already?
Dog on the leash is, yeah, definitely, and especially during early morning and dusk, you know, at night.
Yeah.
Like all throughout the year, really, at that end of the beach, they should really be on
the south end of the beach. And then, so the seabirds are out at sea, although we have seen some younger birds still coming in, and people have heard them about a week or two ago. We were still hearing them flying across.
Which end are you calling the south end?
South end of the beach.
The far end from here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like north.
In my mind, it runs east-west, so which I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong about.
Well, you know, but if you think of the overall New Zealand north-south, surely it goes that way, no?
I'm saying in my mind. So
I have never thought that.
If I go down to the surf club, this is about getting your maps out now. If I go to the surf club, if I go down where the surf club is, do I turn left or right on the beach?
Oh, right, yeah. So you
turn right
left.
Right there. If you're at the beach club.
Left, yeah. South.
Left, okay.
Left, south, but from those stairs.
Waddling across the rocks and into, you know, coastal, kind of lower coastal areas and setting up, nesting sites. So we're pretty.
You twisted it around.
No, look, no,
north is not, look, the north is twisted on your phone.
No, it's not. This is, I haven't touched it.
Okay. I can't show you
this
picture.
We're going to finish the interview now.
Here's the picture of the little blue penguin.
Oh, that's a nice picture. There we go. So that's caught by your camera.
Yeah, one of our field cameras. Yeah,
cool.
Monitoring camera. So that was pretty exciting to see them come ashore because we know they're there, but it's always exciting when we get to see them, right?
Yeah.
So, so that's pretty cool. So it's a pretty much a regular, like most years now we see them, and we've, you know, seen chicks fledge as well from there. Mm. But because they breed so low down, they are really vulnerable to high wave and surges, you know, of tides and that. So sometimes their burrows end up getting washed out as well. But yeah, this little guy is going to have a
be safe.
They're going to have a little nesting site, yeah, in a secret spot near you.
All right, well, let's let's wrap up the interview and get the maps out and sort out where this beach is.
Yeah.
We've been talking to Isabel and Crystal from the Karioi Project. If people want to talk to you guys about the Backyard Hub or the paid service to completely take care of everything, what do they do?
If they go to our website, it's probably the easiest. All our contact info is on there.
Okay.
Yeah, nice. Karioiproject.co.nz.
And you're listening.